What are people usually missing?
There's a ton. Mm-hmm. A lot of times people set up their systems and they don't know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So from the bones of it, the chart of accounts in your accounting system is essentially the list of all the buckets of where money goes. And most of the time, those are wrong.
You're listening to Business Lunch with Roland Frazier. This is your seat at the table. Welcome to another exciting episode of Business Lunch with Roland Frazier. This is Darren, the producer of the show, and today's episode is truly vital for entrepreneurs, no matter what stage of the game your business is in. So here's a question for you. Are you leaving the numbers to someone else? Today, Roland sits with Pam Jordan, who founded the firm Pivot Business Group. Pivot is a fractional CFO firm. And before you clock out, because it sounds too much like tax time, this is an episode that you truly need to listen to if you want to grow. And Pam has some really great takeaways for us. Also, remember to hit subscribe, share your favorite episodes with business-minded friends, and visit businesslunchpodcast.com to sign up for more exclusive content that Roland loves to roll out. But for now, let's get stuck in.
Hey, everybody, this is Roland Frazier with Business Lunch, and we are here today in Laguna Beach with the beautiful ocean just behind the curtain, talking with Pam Jordan. And Pam, your company is Pivot?
That's correct.
Okay, and so website would be?
PivotBusinessGroup.com.
PivotBusinessGroup.com. Okay, tell us a little bit about what you do right now, because I love the thing. I think you guys are in for a treat because there's a lot of need for what you do, and that's why I'm super excited to chat with you.
Excellent. Thanks so much for having me. The easy answer of what I do is I make companies more profitable.
Okay.
Because what I actually do is fractional CFO work, mm-hmm. and that's a little harder to explain. So when I tell people I make them more money, that's pretty easy to understand.
Let's start by telling everybody what a CFO actually is. What does it stand for and what is the job function?
Sure. So CFO is Chief Financial Officer, mm-hmm. and the job function is to essentially cover the back of the owner and protect the company in regards to finance and accounting.
Okay.
To make sure that all the numbers are correct, make sure outside entities have the reports they need, and make sure the company is profitable and playing whatever tax game they want.
Would that also include risk management?
Tons of it.
Okay. What does that mean usually when you're handling something risk management-y?
So part of it is asset protection, mm-hmm. depending on what the company has in their portfolio, whether it's real estate or equipment or whatnot. And then also damage control from employees and fraud. So try to make sure that you've got lots of checks and balances in place so no one walks out with your money. Mm-hmm. And then also a little risk management of the owner and making sure that they're protected and that their financial and accounting behaviors align with the goals of the company, mm-hmm. and any outside entity that would want to make sure that we're behaving.
Okay. And how does it get fractionalized? What does that mean? So we know what now a CFO does, basically. What's a fractional CFO?
Fractional means part-time. So mm-hmm. whether you're a startup or you're a 7-8 figure, you need executive-level financial help. You just don't need it all the time. Mm-hmm. And so that's where my firm comes in and fills that gap. Between a couple hours a week, a couple hours a month, once a quarter, we provide that services.
Okay.
So we can do cash flow management, strategy, acquisitions, valuations, budgets, nuts and bolts, financial reporting to get the business what they need. Mm-hmm. We're just not there all the time.
Right. Okay. Well, that's cool because they don't need a full-time person, right?
Exactly.
So what is the difference between the business that's starting out that's kind of small and has a bookkeeper, mm-hmm. the business that might have an accountant or CPA, the business that would have a fractional CFO, and the business that would have an actual CFO?
So starting out, the entrepreneur is everything from the CEO to the janitor, mm-hmm. to the bookkeeper. Normally, they hire a bookkeeper pretty quickly because mm-hmm. they don't want to deal with the numbers,
right.
which is great. The problem with that is as the company grows, it becomes this larger machine. And so the skill set of the bookkeeper that you had when you were 100, 200, 300,000 is no longer the skill set that you need as you're getting to 1 million and 2 million. Mm-hmm. So that's when companies typically move to the controller type in-house accountant, mm-hmm. where they can do a little bit more higher level reporting, a little bit more understanding of, okay, well, this is coming in, this money is coming in today, so we can't do this until tomorrow. Mm-hmm. The bookkeeper just tracks numbers. The controller does a little bit more strategy and mm-hmm. a little bit more looking at the bigger picture, but not much.
Okay.
So then the next step is when you move to a fractional CFO, which is what my firm does, mm-hmm. where typically around once you hit the seven-figure in revenue, you need a little bit more strategy.
Okay.
And there's also a ton of potential for bleed of money leaving your company. You don't even realize that it's happening. Mm-hmm. And so that's where someone with my type of experience can come in and say, okay, we're doing well here, but these three areas we need a cut. And at the end of the day, we'll get you 5% more at the bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
And then we work with the owners to figure out what their goals are and create a plan to help them get there. And typically around the $20 million in gross revenue is when I recommend people bring on a full-time CFO.
Okay.
Both for the day-to-day, but also for the bigger picture. Because that level, there's a lot of outside entities, whether it's banks, CPAs, lawyers, board of directors, that really want to know what's going on. Mm-hmm. And it's best to have an in-house person to get that level of attention to the outside people.
Okay. And I know we can go on and look in your area, like on Glassdoor and things like that, to see what a CFO would be paid. But what mm-hmm. would somebody, to get a good CFO you hit that $20 million mark, mm-hmm. what would somebody anticipate paying for that?
I would say the beginning salary would be low 120s. Mm-hmm. Most CFO level jobs that I am currently hiring, because as I transition out, I bring other people in. Mm-hmm. It's about $150,000 starting
okay.
salary, which is pretty expensive. And then you've got all the additional, I strongly believe in pay performance. Mm-hmm. So incentivizing them. So its total package can be $200,000.
So what would a typical incentive package be? What does that look like?
Sure. So it depends on the owner's goals and mm-hmm. the company's goals. Mm-hmm. So there's not one size fits all. Mm-hmm. So sometimes we base that incentive based on revenue. Mm-hmm. Other times we base it off of gross profit.
Mm-hmm.
Other times we base it off of growth over time.
Mm-hmm.
And then other companies are straight bottom line. So if we can go up incrementally on a net income, net revenue basis, a percentage goes to the CFO.
If you were hiring a CFO for your company, you hire lots of CFOs, I think, basically, but if you were hiring one for your company, which of those four things that you described as incentive compensation would you choose and why?
For me, I'm bottom line driven. Mm-hmm. Profit first is a good mentality for mm-hmm. small businesses.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, everything's driven by the bottom line, because you can work your tail off and make $10 million in revenue and no net profit, or you can be smart and have $3 million in revenue and $1.5 net income.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the day, in my opinion, it's about what you're walking away with, what your profits are. So I prefer to incentivize people off of profit.
And what does that look like? What kind of percentage? So let's say that the company's doing $20 million and it's making a 10% margin, so it's got $2 million in profit, and that you've got that $150,000 CFO person. How would they get compensated on that bottom line?
It also depends on how many seats at the table are getting a piece of the pie.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's multiple owners that are getting cuts, we need to reduce that. If there's other, like a COO and a CMO and a CTO, mm-hmm. we divide that up. But it's typically a 0.5% is where we start with.
Okay.
And I typically set up a tiered system so that our budget is this. So if we meet our budget, you get your 0.5%.
Mm-hmm.
And for each incremental increase, you get a higher percentage. So the team is incentivized to increase the bottom line, mm-hmm. to make smart decisions with the money, and to make sure the revenue is coming in and as much of it is staying in the company as possible, because at the end of the day, they know it's going to go in their pocket.
How do you keep them from over cost cutting to the detriment of the profitability of the company and the long-term health to maximize their bonus?
It's about motivating and helping them understand that we're a team, mm-hmm. and it's all company. So if you've got someone that's just out for themselves and they're going to, you know, buy the cheap toilet paper and they're not going to buy the staples and they're, you know, not going to have coffee breaks anymore,
mm-hmm.
not the best person.
Then you have a talk with them. Maybe.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So it's the mentality of this is our team, it's our company, and if we all work hard, then we all win. Okay. So incentivizing the rest of the team helps keep people in check so that the CFO doesn't run off and do crazy things and everyone's saying, no, come back. I want my, you know, I want my bonus too.
I want my coffee break.
Right.
Okay. Okay. So now let's say that person all in is $180,000 a year once you load in benefits and everything else. So that's $15,000 a month if my math serves me. If they were to hire a fractional CFO, how would that annualize out? Like, what's the difference in costs look like?
So most CFOs, fractional CFOs, do value billing. Mm-hmm. So a set amount each month. I have seen anything from $800 a month to $9,000 a month. Mm-hmm. It just depends on the level of touch that you need mm-hmm. and how demanding the client's going to be. A lot of times it's comes in waves. So initially when I engage with a client, normally it's a mess, quite mm-hmm. frankly. Mm-hmm. And it's going to take me a while to get things cleaned up, mm-hmm. Bring in
a
team. Right. Realize that they're, you know, not accounting for three credit cards and right. get all that up to date and current. So initially the engagement can be a little bit more.
Sure.
But once we get everything cleaned up and the system's in place, then it goes to monthly maintenance. And that can be typically $1,000 to $3,000 a month.
Okay. And what kind of time do you get for that?
Anywhere from 1 hour every 2 weeks to 4 hours a week.
Okay.
Initially, when I engage, if it's a really big mess, I'll be there, you know, a day, a week and right. have, you know, until we can get the disaster cleaned up. And then I'll back up to 4 hours a week and then 2 hours a week. And it just depends on the growth and the season of the company.
So what would you say is the biggest advantage of having the, besides cost, to having a fractional CFO?
So you have a team member who is available for you to give advice, run questions by, run ideas by. Because fractional CFOs aren't consultants. We don't come in and tell you what's wrong and then say good luck and leave. Mm-hmm. We are truly part of the team.
Right.
And so you have access to us and our knowledge and our experience all the time, which you wouldn't have if it was, okay, I'll see you, you know, like your CPA. You see your CPA maybe twice a year. Mm-hmm. It should be more, but that's a different conversation. Mm-hmm. But with a fractional CFO, you've got me on my phone. You've got a text. You want to sure. have a phone call. We can jump on. I don't have to physically come to your office to tell you that, yes, it's a good idea to do that. Or hang on, let's run some numbers and maybe not.
Should a CFO be a CPA as well?
Not necessarily. There is a big difference between tax accounting and business accounting. Mm-hmm. And most CFOs focus on the business accounting, not necessarily the tax accounting. So being a tax professional is helpful, but by no means does it make sure that you can do the job of a CFO, because it's the day-to-day accounting, not just the tax preparation. So a lot of individuals who are CPAs just focus on taxes. Oh, no, we can't do this. Or, oh, we're going to reduce taxes here, where business accounting looks at the whole picture mm-hmm. and the goals of the company and makes financial decisions based on those goals, not just on the tax implications.
What outside of taxes, when CPAs are doing audits and things like that, how does the CFO or fractional CFO interact with the auditing team on the accounting side?
On the accounting side, obviously we provide any information and reports. And then normally there's a lot of explanation of why we're doing things the way they think is odd. Mm-hmm. Because there's a bigger reason why we're doing it. An example is I've got a client that's in the manufacturing field, and the CPA wanted to file their taxes on an accrual basis mm-hmm. and did out all the paperwork and came and sat down, and it was trying to do the review, and I was going through everything. I was like, something's not right. And I finally realized he was doing it on an accrual basis mm-hmm. instead of cash. Mm-hmm. And I explained to him why we needed to be cash. And ultimately, it was $60,000 of tax savings because of the game we were playing, and by changing the tax election, my client saved $60,000 in taxes.
Right, which probably paid for your fee and then some, right?
Yes.
Nice. Okay, so we've got those things. Let's talk about different functions. So we've got accounting, business accounting, kind mm-hmm. of the numbers, the T accounts and all that stuff.
Sure.
You've got accounting software and putting systems and things like that in. You've got what else that would you say as far as categories of things that you get when you have a professional professional at that level come into your business?
A couple other added bonuses is debt planning and debt structure and debt pay down.
Okay.
A lot of times people just want to get rid of debt, but there are times where debt can be helpful for tax purposes as well as assets. So helping business owners know when to take on debt, when not to take on debt, and then how to strategically pay it down when that's the time to do so. Another key service that we provide is very strategic in cash flow. A lot of business owners find out if they have money by looking in their bank account rather than seeing the full picture. And so having a CFO that has a plan and a spreadsheet or some tool that shows you, look, yes, you have this much in the bank, but this is how much has got to go out this week. This is how much is going to come in next week. And then this is going to get us an extra $20,000 that you can do XYZ with.
So we call that budgeting. Okay. And that was one of the distinctions I wanted to make, because a lot of bookkeepers and accountants in businesses, bookkeepers, controllers even, don't do any kind of financial modeling, don't do any kind of budgeting. And so it's kind of a panicky, you know, situation pretty much all the time, right?
Correct.
So, surprise, we need an extra $200,000 for this. We have to make a tax payment of $100,000 for that. And you can do a few of those and it can affect your cash flow. So the budgeting process would be one of the things too.
Definitely.
Right?
Yeah. One big distinction is bookkeeper and controller level focus on accounting, which is just looking in the rearview mirror. Mm-hmm. It just tells you where you've been. Mm-hmm. Where a CFO looks forward, it's looking out the front window, taking the information of where you've been, and then being intentional about where you're going next and doing those projections and doing those budgets and keeping the company on track to wherever the goal or destination may be.
What do you find to be the key KPIs, the key performance indicators that business owners should have from their financial team to be able to make smart decisions?
So I call them the top five. Mm-hmm. They are not what a typical CPA or accountant would tell you to look at. Mm-hmm. But I work with a lot of entrepreneurs who I understand you have 5 minutes on a Monday afternoon to see how you're doing. Mm-hmm. So those top five are: number one is revenue and sales, all the money that came in the bank, wherever it came from, all the money. The second thing is all the expenses, all the money that's left. Your bank account, what is that amount, including principal to loans, which a lot of people don't account for, but that's actual money that's left your account that you need to know about.
Okay.
The third number is profit, which I will argue is the most important. Mm-hmm. And then the fourth number is all of the money that's owed to you, both through accounts receivable and any loans that you have to someone that's going to be paying you back. And the fifth one is how much money you owe someone else. Mm-hmm. So to know that before I can do anything, all of this money has to be paid out to someone else before I can take it in. So with those five numbers measured over time, you can track if there's a problem and flag something that, oh my gosh, we're not going to be able to make payroll because we didn't collect all the money. Someone get on the phone and collect all the money off AR, go.
What are the time cohorts of that you like to look at? Is that, so those numbers need to have some sort of time to have context, right? How does that show up in your dashboard or whatever you're looking at?
So in the owner's dashboard that we build, it's typically a 7-day period, and we do a 3-month look back, and then we also have a projection. So you're seeing where you've been and you're also comparing to where you're going.
Okay.
So it's real time in both directions.
Do you track variances as well?
Oh, definitely, yeah. There's a little graph. Some people are visual, so you've got to have
green area arrows up and red arrows down when we're on those things.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is frustrating and helpful, you know, at the same time. Okay, and then what about ratio analysis and trend analysis and things like that? Are there any of those kinds of things that you think are important, you know, quick ratios or, you know, AR turnover, any of that kind of stuff, inventory turnover?
Sure. So debt to equity ratio is a big one, especially if you're going to try and get any outside funding. Mm-hmm. Banks care about that number, so you've got to keep that in consideration. AR to AP, obviously, accounts receivable to accounts payable, you want a 2-to-1, because ideally, if
so, as many accounts payable as accounts receivable.
Go the other way.
Yes.
You want, for every $2 that's coming in, you want to only have to pay out one.
Right.
So that's a good matrix. Other ratios is, what do you have in your reserves? Mm-hmm. The ideal would be to have 3 months of burn, you know, whatever your burn rate is, have that to the side.
And what's a burn rate, just so everybody understands?
Sure. The burn rate is the second number that I talked about in the top three. All the money that leaves your bank account on a monthly basis, that's your burn rate.
Okay.
So just to keep your doors open, this isn't the flashy things. This is just keep the lights on, payroll, taxes, utilities, rent, those kind of things. That's your burn rate.
So primarily what they call G&A, right? General and administrative, no variable cost of inventory, cost of goods sold, that kind of stuff.
Correct, correct.
Okay, cool. So now we've got an idea of what those key numbers are and the time. What are the biggest challenges that you find that exist, or maybe even when you go in, you've been coming to lots of companies and looked at it, and you have people who do that as well. What are people usually missing?
There's a ton. Mm-hmm. A lot of times people set up their systems and they don't know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So from the bones of it, the chart of accounts in your accounting system is essentially the list of all the buckets of where money goes. And most of the time, those are wrong.
In what way? Because you would think, you'd be like, well, money goes into the cash and money goes into this.
Right. You would think that it's logical, but there's a lot of businesses who set up this list and they're pointing numbers to the wrong bucket, per se. So a lot of times I see people pointing income to cost of goods sold.
Okay.
When it's not. Mm-hmm. I see companies pointing expenses to cost of goods sold. I see cost of goods sold going to expenses. There was one client up in the Midwest. They were a restoration company. And I went in and they told me they were $9 million gross revenue. Within 2 hours, I told them that they were actually a $15 million gross revenue
company.
That
was a happy surprise.
It was, except for, you know, the owner about had a heart attack because he didn't realize he was that size company. Mm-hmm. But it was all because of their coding and how they were accounting for things. Hmm. The numbers weren't going into the right bucket. So when you looked at the reports, you were missing.
So gross revenue and net sales were overstated and expenses were understated? Because they were taking expenses out and hitting revenue before they counted it as revenue, basically, is what I'm guessing, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So, and they just didn't realize it.
And so how did they fix that?
We cleaned up their chart of accounts, mm-hmm. and I trained their internal accounting team on how to properly code all the money that goes in and out. Mm-hmm. Did lots of cleanup for the past 2 years so that they could have good tracking and just showed them how to do it correctly.
So their margins were the same. It's just that their top line was understated
right? significantly.
Yeah. Which could actually be really important in a company that sells for a multiple of sales or attracting a certain level of financing from the equity markets or private equity markets and things like that, right?
Exactly. And this particular company was looking to do some acquisition of some other companies. Mm-hmm. And so it was very beneficial for him to walk in and say, oh, well, I'm a $15 million revenue when he was negotiating rather than a $9 million.
So when companies get loans from banks or outside mm-hmm. funding sources, they're typically things called covenants mm-hmm. that you have to not fall below a certain X, whatever these numbers are.
Right.
Is that something that you find is an important thing to track that a lot of people don't track as well? Or how do you see that being dealt with?
Definitely. So the biggest area where I see this being a problem is when companies go out and get lines of credit. Because mm-hmm. very often, banks will put in their terms or their covenants that you have to pay that down to zero once a year. Mm-hmm. And business owners don't understand that that's in there, nor do they do that. And so after 2 to 3 years of having a line of credit that never goes down to zero, the bank gets flagged, and that's when you start getting into special assets, and they will freeze the line of credit mm-hmm. and term out the debt, and that's where business owners get their hands tied because then their cash and their safety net is gone. Mm-hmm. So that's a huge issue that I see very frequently.
What else do you think is important that we haven't talked about yet that people should know? I know there's a huge, you know, obviously there's books on finance and there's courses on being CPAs and things like that. But what are the other things that you think people should really be thinking about and looking out for?
One key thing to remember is as the business owner, you need to care about the numbers because they're your numbers. Mm-hmm. It's your money. Very often I find entrepreneurs that say, oh, I have someone take care of that. I don't want to look at numbers. I don't have time for that. I understand that. And I'm not telling you you need to tell me what your retained earnings is every day. But you do need to have some sort of matrix that you're following and tracking because it's your company and it's your money. Mm-hmm. And if something goes wrong or something goes right, you need to know. Because mm-hmm. at the end of the day, your signature's on the bank loan, it's your house that's at risk
right.
if you're not aware of how you're doing. I had a client who was running a telemarketing company and it was doing very well and he hired a team to run it and he essentially went off and partied for a year mm-hmm. to a loss of $1.3 million,
right.
which caused the bank to freak out, call special assets, and then I rolled in and had to get everybody back in the company, right, refocused, put in these benchmarks, track all the numbers, make the business owner understand, look, you don't need to care about everything, care about these numbers. Mm-hmm. And as soon as something goes out of whack, we have a trigger system of what needs to happen. And he wasn't negative the following year.
Shocking.
Amazing.
Did he get to party all year again?
He has, and he's been partying at a couple of your events lately.
Ah, fantastic. I like that. I like that. Okay. What, for just a general understanding of basic fiscal, financial literacy, is there anything that you recommend that entrepreneurs read to kind of get started to understand how all the numbers work and everything? Because there's a lot of entrepreneurs I know who are just good marketers, good salespeople. They stumbled onto an opportunity and took advantage of it. They built a significant business out of it, but they don't have any business or financial background. So how does somebody get up to speed kind of on at least an overview basis to be able to understand the numbers and acronyms that you use when working with a CFO and accounting type people?
Got you. One tool that I recommend for entrepreneurs is called Profit First by Mike Michalowicz.
Okay.
Because it is taking traditional accounting and turning it on its head. Because to your point, most entrepreneurs don't know about accounting. So trying to give them a GAAP, generally accepted accounting practices, mm-hmm, book on how to read a financial statement isn't going to help them.
Right.
But giving them an everyday practical tool of how to understand their numbers will help them get a lot further. Mm-hmm. And then it's a matter of building a team under you that can do the day-to-day correctly, according to all the outside GAAP entities, mm-hmm, but you understand what the numbers mean.
Okay, cool. And so Profit First, anything else that you think is good?
I haven't found another accounting tool, mm-hmm, that would be beneficial for the typical entrepreneur.
Okay. I recommend a lot of people to Keys to the Vault by Keith Cunningham.
I haven't read that one.
Yeah, it's kind of a good getting started thing too. And Profit First, I think, is fantastic as well. Cool. So what about systems and software? What do you think people ought to use? Is there one kind of outstanding tool? What would that be?
Yeah, sure. So the most commonly used is QuickBooks, mm-hmm, and they have various versions of it. The easiest is QuickBooks Online.
Okay.
You can set it up in 20 minutes, and it comes with templates, so you don't have to guess what your chart of accounts needs to look like. Mm-hmm. You just put in your password and you use theirs until you come up with some other accounts to add to it.
Nice.
They also have desktop versions and Premier and Pro and Enterprise and all various levels. But you don't have to be an MBA, a CPA, or have a strong accounting knowledge to run any of those software, because you enter a bill and it does all the accounting journal entries and general ledger adjustments behind the scenes. So you don't even need to understand what a journal entry is or, mm-hmm, a general ledger or any of these accounts. You enter a bill, you write a check, and behind the scenes, all of it is done for you.
Okay. When should somebody get an audit? Not an IRS audit, but an actual accounting audit.
First off, they're expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And so typically about $15 million is where I've seen it being implemented,
okay,
specifically in the construction industry when it comes to bonding. Mm-hmm. But I don't typically recommend companies to go jump into the audit pool unless there's an outside entity requiring them to do so.
Mm-hmm.
But that's with the assumption that they have good internal controls, mm-hmm, and checks and balances, so that the same person who's doing the day-to-day accounting isn't the person who's reconciling. And there's also a higher level accounting or finance individual making sure everything's going in the right spots. However, if you don't have those checks and balances in place, you need to have someone come in and make sure you're doing the right thing. Because you'd be amazed the things that I see missing from people's books because they don't know.
Could you give a simple example of an internal control and what it would help stop from happening, just so people can understand?
Sure. So at the bones of it, the person who opens the mail, enters your bill, and writes your checks and signs your checks shouldn't be the person that's reconciling your bank account.
Right.
Because there's only a 30-day window where someone can make a bad decision before you find out about it.
Mm-hmm.
And you also want to make sure that you have the only administrative access to any of your online bank or merchant accounts, mm-hmm, so that they can't go in and send wires or make large transfers without you being aware of it.
Is there a tool that you use to manage all of that, like on the password access side of things?
I don't have any tools. What do you suggest?
Okay. LastPass. What's cool about it is you can designate employees. And then, so basically, they get a LastPass password, and then that gives them access to all of the accounts through the correct password, but they never have the actual account password. They only have the password to their LastPass account. Perfect. So if they leave the company, you just terminate that account and there's no need to go change 400 different things that they have to get. So I
Excellent.
Find that,
no, that would be
a really
huge.
Good way to get that. Yeah, and it actually, with respect to everything like websites, domain name transfers, all that, because people can really mess up your business if they are yes. unhappy with you and have access to those passwords.
Yes, I had a client that it took us 2 weeks to get control of all of their online banking because they had a disgruntled office manager leave with all the passwords.
Are there different types of audits on talking about those expensive audits? Are there different levels of services that accountants provide with respect to financial statements and things?
Typically, there's reviewed and then there's audited. Reviewed is pretty much coming in and looking at the reports that you have and essentially saying they make sense and they write a narrative about that.
Generally looks right.
It generally...
We haven't checked any of it out.
Exactly.
But okay.
They're not pulling any receipts. Where an audit is, okay, give me your bank statements, give me your credit card statements, pull these five invoices, and they're validating the information in the accounting software matches what's on the statements.
And then they're putting themselves on the line saying, we have found that the financial statements of XYZ company fairly represent the financial condition. They're like liable to third parties who are relying on that they went through some process to
Correct.
Determine the validity of the transactions.
Correct.
And both of those is a step up from what a non-CPA company would do, like which is generally called compiled. Is it still called compiled?
Yep.
Yeah. So you have compiled, reviewed, and audited. If people are interested in finding out more about your services for Fractional CFO, what's the best way to find out more about you, your company, and all that kind of fun stuff?
Sure. The easiest way to reach me is at pivotbusinessgroup.com.
Can you spell that? Just
sure. PIVOT.
There we go.
BUSINESSGROUP.com.
Nice. Okay, good. And it's a test. I just
yeah. I am a visual person, so that was really hard.
I liked it. It was good.
And then you can also find me at PamJordanCFO.com.
Okay, fantastic. Anything that I didn't ask that you think people should know about in addition to the stuff we talked about?
If you don't know numbers, find someone who does.
Fantastic. Awesome. Thank you so much for being on the show. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Roland.
You've been listening to Business Lunch with Roland Frazier. For more information, go to businesslunchpodcast.com. And if you're interested in getting to work with Roland, we're actually doing some leverage, exit, grow, scale intensives. These are two-day, in-person, intimate workshops where you and about 20 other business owners will deep dive into 30-plus core strategies to implement into your business in order to 10x your growth in the next 12 months. We are doing one in London in September and another one in San Diego in January. If you're interested, shoot us an email at support@wrmembers.com. That's support@wrmembers.com. All right, thanks for listening.